Hi there, my name is Earl Miles, and you might know me from, I don't know, anywhere on Drupal that you've ever built a site. This is episode 23 of the Modules Unraveled podcast.
Welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast, where the Drupal community speaks, and now your host. Today is his three-year wedding anniversary. Congratulations, Brian Lewis.
That's right. June 6th, 2009, I was married to my lovely wife. Anyway, welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast. My name is Brian Lewis, and today I have with me Earl Miles. Earl is the maintainer of the little-known modules Views, CTools, and Panels, among thousands of others, and he's spoken at nearly every North American DrupalCon except Chicago and about half the European ones. And today we're going to be talking about his current evil project, which is to get Views into core for Drupal 8. So, Earl, how are you?
I'd like to say it's exaggerating to say thousands. It's more like dozens. Okay. If you want thousands, you got to talk to Dave Reed.
Right.
I'm great. Busy as busy can be these days. That's kind of what happens when you start shilling for money on your blog, apparently.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit later. But do you want to start out by telling us a little bit about who you are and where you come from?
Sure. I live in San Jose, California. I've lived here in the San Francisco Bay Area for close to 15 years now. Before that, I was in New York, and I actually grew up in Nebraska and then Colorado, so kind of a nice varied background. Mm. I've been doing software development since fourth grade, which, if you do the math, that means I was working on Apple IIs in the elementary school library when they had their nice, shiny new Apple, and they had no idea what to do with me, so they let me play with their one computer in the library, which was pretty awesome. Hmm. And so I found Drupal a few years ago and decided it didn't do enough stuff for what I wanted it to do. And in theory, I tried to make it do more stuff so it could do what I wanted it to do. And I never actually built that site. So it's actually kind of unclear why I'm still doing all this stuff, except that I am.
Well, when did you get started with Drupal? What was that you're trying to do?
It was in 2005, and I had this idea for a cool, I don't know if it would be cool, but it was cool in theory, a website called Assign Blame, which was kind of a game thing, kind of like Am I Hot or Not? Well, it was, is this person to blame or not? And it would pick a topic and a person, and you would go, is this person to blame for this? And you'd get votes and tallies and some articles. I've got, like, most of the code for the site, it's all there, but it's just one of those things that, because it's a hobby, I never end up spending any time on it because I always have a thousand other things to do.
Right. What's the most recent project you've been working on?
The most recent project I've been working on. I've been kind of working on some of this Views stuff simultaneously with Panelizer stuff. For those who've been paying attention to what's kind of latest and greatest in the Drupal world, I work on this suite of modules that are under the Panels name, although a lot of them aren't actually panels or even barely related. Pantheon and Chapter 3 have created a distro called Panoply, which heavily utilizes this kind of paradigm for building sites. And the big project that I've been working on that for the last, I guess since like September of last year, is called Panelizer, which allows you to set up panels for nodes by type, but you can then have any node of that type have its own panel. And the most recent thing I added to that a few weeks ago is that you can now do it per view mode, so your teasers can be different from your regular page. And if you add more view modes, then you can have each of them panelized the way you want. Mm. And it's got a ridiculous array of combinations that people who are using that kind of thing really love.
Yeah, I was just actually playing with Panoply last week, thinking about using it for a site, and I was really impressed with just straight out of the box what it can do.
Yeah, there's some great stuff. I find that it's definitely a beta, and you still run into issues with it. Mm-hmm. But, it's being worked on, and hopefully the beta status will come off and it will actually be stronger to use. But it's a really nice combination with Pantheon because you can just go there and get one set up and it's all there for you and you can start playing with it. And it gives you a lot of capability. What it doesn't do is really, just by looking at it, give you an idea of the full power of Panelizer, which when you start putting some of that stuff together, gives some really nice power to content people. One of the big issues people have had with panels is that they're afraid of the admin UI because it's really complicated, especially because of the page manager thing and it's got variants and paths and all this stuff that people don't get. And when you're talking Panelizer, you're just talking nodes or other entities because it can also panelize your terms and your users if you want. And it kind of strips back what's available and lets you apply control to even strip back more of it so that you can give just what's good for your content people to do with their stuff. That was really generic.
No, that's fine though. I had a question, and since I have you on, I get to ask you whatever I want. What's the I don't know how to say this. I really want to use Panoply for an existing site, but since it's a distribution, I can't do that. What are the core modules that give it that click interface that I could hand off to a client?
Oh, see, that's tough. There's a lot of stuff in Panoply that I'm not as familiar with because they've got some custom stuff in there to change the ad content interface a lot, so you get content previews and stuff that's really nice. They've got custom stuff to add a whole bunch of new layouts, and those are apps on their app server, which you can download, but you need whatever their little app manager thing is, and I'm not completely familiar with it. Okay. They also have a preset WYSIWYG and a couple of other nice things.
So those aren't necessarily part of Panelizer or anything, but they're custom for Pantheon?
Right. Now, if you're just talking the Panelizer stuff, then all you really need are CTools panels in the Panelizer module. And then you just need to go configure it. One of the other things, and fieldable panel panes, that's another module that's really important to it. And one of the things that Panoply comes with is it gives you a dozen fieldable panel pane bundles. And they're all very simple there. I want to add an image. So you have this block, which is just an image which you upload, and then you can put that block wherever you want. And there's other types of media to make it really easy for your content people to pick different kinds of things and just throw them up in a block and put them on this page.
Yeah, that would be good. Okay, well, we got off topic immediately, so
yeah.
Let's try and bring it back. We're actually here to talk about views, not panels. So... So there's been a lot of effort in the past to get views into core. They wanted to get it in 7, but it didn't happen. How many times has that actually been proposed? How many times has that been tried?
Well, proposed is different from tried.
Okay.
There has never been any effort prior to this one that got past the let's talk about it stage. Dries called for it in Drupal 7. And early on in the Drupal 7 cycle, I sat down in a hotel room with Angela Byron, a.k.a. Webchick, at which DrupalCon was that? Was it Boston? No, I don't think it was Boston. I think it was D.C. And we kind of tried to hash out what could happen and what wouldn't happen. And ultimately, what happened with it, the size and scope of the project scared the living bejeebus out of her. And that made her uncertain that it would survive the process of getting into core because, especially up to that point, anything large that had been tried to put into core had a real problem with architectural disagreements. People would hold up issues, nitpicking little things. It was hard to keep conversations on topic, and it would just stall the work. So we were having some disagreements, and by we, I mean me and Damian Turnout, aka Damzy, and a few other core people, I don't remember off the top of my head, about how the architecture should work. And there came a question of, well, can we just pick up Views as it is and put it into Core? And that got a resounding no. Well, do we have to rewrite it? And that got a resounding maybe. Mm-hmm. And given that it took me a year to rewrite Views 1 into Views 2, that was still too recent for me to be excited about taking the time and energy required to rewrite it again, mm-hmm. especially since at that point it was no longer clear that I was going to have corporate sponsorship to do it.
Gotcha.
So, okay. To be honest, I was the one who eventually said, no, this isn't going to happen, because it was too much of a burden on me.
Right. Yeah, that's totally understandable, though. Okay, so then what are you doing differently this time that you feel like you can go ahead and try to put it in Core?
Dries has done two things that have make this possible, I think, in Drupal 8. Actually, it's probably more like three. The first one is we have the initiative system, which is completely new for Drupal 8. And there's already something like half a dozen initiatives of varying scopes that are all pretty big and have kind of a long, I guess you could call it time to market, but it's not accurate, but it's, you know, time to completion. There's a lot that has to go into them. There's project management. And they're all in various states of progress and success right now. There's definitely some that have stalled, others that are doing really well. And but they have, I guess, primed the core process for the fact that these big things can happen and made it easier to sidestep some of the arguments. And part of that is because Dries has actually declared that if you say, okay, enough arguing, Dries, make a decision and lay it out for him and what the decision needs to be, then he'll make it and end the argument. And that's actually new, because prior to this kind of thing, Dries really wanted to stay out of that kind of thing and would say, let the community handle it. But it's kind of become clear that when you're trying to look for a consensus of a large number of people and there isn't even a definition of who those people are, it's the group of people that happens to be working on that kind of thing at any given time. And people come and go. You know, you've got people who've been busy in Core for a long time. You've got people who've only been involved for a few months. But it doesn't take that long for people to have strong opinions and contribute enough to get listened to. So that was a major fix on the process. He also set up at Denver, he talked about a lieutenant model, which was actually kind of the thing that made me ask, although I don't think we're actually going to do Views with that model. But that idea was that it could be kind of a sub-maintainer who would have commit access to a particular system. And I don't think we'd worked out the technical details, like would it actually be a different repository and then the packaging script pulls in from the other repo, which would then keep whatever the lieutenant is running isolated, or would it just be a case of lieutenant can do these big pull requests and they just go in? I don't think the technical details have been handled, which is one of the reasons I'm not sure we would do Views in that model. On the other hand, if Dries decides he wants another committer to handle stuff like that, it would be a possibility to keep it going. Then you just have the issue that is the person doing the committing also doing a lot of the work? Because that's always been something we've tried to avoid in Core.
Okay. When you first said that Dries was going to have kind of the final say, it actually scared me a little bit. It almost made me think like a dictatorship. But then I was thinking, you know, just building a website for a client, you always want to have that dedicated person on the client side who has the final say, so that the committee is not going back and forth and then, you know, you end up with gray.
And that's exactly it. You have somewhere between 2 and 30 people, and if those people can't come to a consensus, you end up with, you know, 12 versus 11 and then 5 or 6 people who have no opinion.
Right.
There's no way to come to a decision. You need someone empowered to say, look, we have to make a decision or we can't move forward, and it is not worth just stopping work because we can't come to a decision. So lay it out for me, make your arguments, and I'll choose.
Right, right. Yeah. Good. Okay, so who's on the team and what are their different roles?
That's actually one of the new things, that this initiative actually has a formal team. Most of the actually, I think all of the other initiatives are one person who's leading it and then people who are contributing it to it, but not really necessarily a team. Mm-hmm. We set this up because this is a big project and I'm tired of doing this stuff solo. And I've got a good co-committer in Views already by the name of Daniel Venner, and he lives in Germany. And he's been contributing to Views since 2008, I think, and really helped pick up a lot of the slack because it got to a point where just maintaining the package was overwhelming me because I had to make money, and Views does not actually make money for me.
Right.
So he was able to help with that, and he's a great guy, and he's a really good developer. So knowing that, we're like, well, the two of us really aren't enough either. So we started looking around for other people who are contributing a lot. And we've got Daniel. We added Tim Plunkett out of ZivTech because ZivTech is offering, I think, 10 or 20% of his time. So we'll have that for like 6 months. Cool. And we got XJM, a.k.a. Jess, who was one of your early interviews.
Yep.
She does a lot of community stuff, and we brought her in because she's been doing so much with the review process. She knows all of the personalities. She can help us, one, make sure the code is high enough quality to even be submitted for review before we do it, and two, help it through the review process because she is so great to work with, that she can probably avoid some of the arguments that the more abrasive personalities like me might engender, because we get, you know, people like me and frankly most of the core contributors, we get an idea in our head and we want to plow ahead full steam with it, and that can lengthen some of the arguments, and that's one of the things XJM is really good at, is diffusing that kind of thing. So bringing her on, I think, has actually been a really important step. She doesn't actually know that much about Views' architecture, so she's kind of a fresh pair of eyes and can look at stuff critically that we just take for granted.
Right.
And we've also got Damien Lee. I'm probably mispronouncing his name because I'm not actually sure of his nationality off the top. He's Damien Kloip on IRC and Drupal.org, and his company has given him 2 days a week to work on this as well.
All right, so it's the four of you then?
Is that four? Five.
Oh, right, 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 five. Okay.
And then there's a few other people that are popping in here and there, but I don't think we're calling them formally on the team yet, just because everyone who's on the team is dedicated to spending at least a certain percentage of their time until the end of the year to get this done.
Cool. Well, that, I mean, that sounds really good to me, knowing that I've got at least, you know, a handful of people who are working on this full time, well, part time, but are dedicated to it. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it gives us a better chance of actually getting it done. It staves off the burnout factor that happens when you've got someone contributing to open source solo and you run into a big problem and it seems insurmountable. And now you have to come up with the energy to get past it.
Right. Right. Okay. So what does this mean for experienced Drupal developers and site builders having Views in core? How's that going to affect them?
You know, hopefully it won't actually affect them in that many ways, because most experienced site builders, the first thing they do is they go grab their set of favorite modules, which is, you know, their 10 or 20 or their whatever that they put on every one of their sites, of which Views is almost always the first one.
Right.
So this would just move, for them, Views into core. One of the effects that it would have is that core itself would be better integrated with Views, which means that, like, the default Drupal.org front page, the default Drupal.org front page would be a view rather than this hard-coded thing. And it's already a view that ships with Views, but it's kind of more of an example than something you would actually use.
Right.
So it would change your workflow in terms of how you would change the default front page, change the tracker module. And potentially we can go even further. We could use a view to display comments. We could use a view for the taxonomy pages and a whole bunch of places where we're listing nodes. We can change all that stuff into Views, then make it configurable via the Views UI. And then when you want to change it, you change it, do your export, and you got it. Okay. It also, the biggest advantage is distros like Snowman. If you've ever heard, there's a project which in theory is trying to make a Drupal that doesn't come with an application, or if it does, it comes with a completely replaceable application called Snowman. Hmm. It's kind of meant to be a pure framework. And it turns out it's almost impossible to do that without either putting views in core or reproducing a bunch of functionality from views and making a views light, which is something that I have warned everyone I would be angry if it happened.
Okay, so how about for people who are brand new to Drupal? How is this going to affect them when they're trying it out for the first time?
Well, they'll probably have to figure out what the heck this views thing is. but my experience is that people who are brand new to Drupal find views really fast, and it's part of their learning curve. Mm-hmm. Because there's just so many things that you ask how to do, and it's like, oh, just create a view. Right. And it's all over Drupal.org. So I think from their perspective, that's one easier thing, because in theory, Drupal will come with views on and enabled with a bunch of good examples, and it's right there.
Is there going to be anything done like to make it more, I don't know how to say this, but like obvious, so they don't necessarily have to go to structure, you know, admin structure views or whatever. They can, is there going to be anything more on the interface to edit these?
Well, there's already contextual links so that when you're looking at a view, you can click the gear and go to edit the view, right, which would then come up in an overlay. So any place in Drupal that already has a view, you'll get that. So if you're looking at your River of News front page, then you'll have edit view right there.
Right.
So you can then go and edit it right away. But in terms of finding views that you're not actually looking at, you'll still have to go to an admin page.
Okay. Well, that's what I meant. I guess a contextual
link,
so it's pretty much taking care of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And actually, honestly, views actually blazed that trail on contextual links. Before Drupal 7, we didn't have contextual links. And I stole a piece of code that I think it was Nate from Lullabot had written for Sony back in Drupal 5, which added these little hover links over blocks. And I'd stolen that for views way back when, so that you could get to the edit interface from a view while you were looking at it.
Hmm. That's funny. Yeah. Cool. Well, I asked people on Twitter if they had any questions for you. And the first one I got back was from Paul Del Signor, and he said, he asked if I would ask you if the UI is going to change in Drupal 8 and if there's going to be any expected additions.
I imagine we'll get some little changes here and there. We're already running into issues. People are afraid the modal isn't accessible enough, so we need to make sure we work on accessibility. But for the most part, when a few months ago there was a set of usability tests, and I'm not going to say that views graded perfectly, but the views UI, most of the people who were given tasks to do with views were able to figure out how to do the tasks they were given, which was not true of the rest of Drupal.
Hmm.
So the views UI is pretty good for Drupal. It may not be the best UI ever, but a lot of effort has gone into what's there, and it's a really complicated thing. And the most difficult part about the UI is that views cannot, at the moment, describe your data architecture for you, because it's all given to it by other systems. So the biggest obstacle to learning views is really learning how your data interacts. And that's not something the UI is able to teach you very well. You have to understand your data to get that. Once you understand the data, what you do in views is more straightforward.
Okay, I see. Well, Damian McKenna asked, well, let's see, how should I do this? He did get back to me, I put it there, but...
oh, okay.
The drop-down menus. Do you understand what he means by that? Because I don't
really
understand.
Yes, I do. Okay. So the way he asked the question was that Views 3 adds some widget types versus what Drupal 7 includes. And what he's specifically talking about is on the Views UI, there is this thing called a drop button. And so if you go and look at, say, the list of fields, there's a thing that says add and a little link right beside it where you can click and get a list of menus. That drop button, we really would like to put in core everywhere that you have a list of operations, because the awesomest thing about that is wherever you have a list of operations, there is usually one that is overwhelmingly used over all the others. Right. And typically that's edit. Mm-hmm. So you have that one visible and then a little link beside it that lets you know there's these other operations too. And in views, we do things like you have edit or actually add, and then you got rearrange or a couple other things beside it. With operations, you've also got edit, delete, enable, disable, clone, export, stuff like that. And you can have a lot of them, and they take up a lot of space. But generally what you want is edit. Right. So when you're listing views, you've got edit right there, and then if you want the other stuff, you have one extra click to get to it, but it makes the UI much more compact and less scary.
Yeah, because that can get real long if they're all listed on the page all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, then he asked, will the views in Drupal core still have separate modules for the core functionality versus UI? So like the views module versus the views UI?
So far as I know, we plan to retain that. It exists for one reason and one reason only, which is for sites that are really serious about their security, you can go in and you can rm-rf views UI.module, and no one will ever be maintaining your views through the UI ever again. And there are a few sites out there where that actually matters. It is safer than a permission because UID1 overrides all the permissions. So this is most commonly used when you have a dev stage live.
Mm-hmm.
Setup where your live is actually crippled because you've removed all of the editing permissions and no one, none of your content people ever use the live site.
Hmm. Okay, so that's then like everything's exported and then just pushed up with Git or something like that.
Yep.
Okay. I hadn't even thought about that. That's cool. I'm learning something new. Okay, and actually, and on that, is the views module even going to be a separate module, or is it just going to be pushed into like the core modules folder?
It'll be in the core modules folder. It has to be a module just because it needs hooks. It needs hook menu and hook block and a few other hooks so it can react to the system. And that probably will remain the views module. The views module file itself is not terribly big, and a lot of what's in it could be moved elsewhere anyway, but those functions are still needed somewhere.
Okay.
So.
Okay, cool. Well, Thomas Lattimore asked, why should views be in core instead of just a contrib module?
Why should views be in core? One, because I'm tired of maintaining it. it's not entirely accurate. I will still be working on it even in core, but it's a lot of work. And it's also depressing work because the issue queue is very, very heavily trafficked.
Right.
And not that many people are really part of the issue queue. Like, there's a big, big difference on working on core than working on contrib, even big contrib, because of the volume of people who will review issues, which in core, it's still too small of a number. But it's still like, half a dozen people will review issues, and in contrib it's usually one,
right.
If you're lucky, and that's only for the top 5 or 10 modules. Or if you're lucky, you've got someone at a shop that's heavily using your module, and they'll help you review issues because the shop relies on it. But that's pretty hit or miss. So that's one reason, is that I would really like to spend less of my brain power maintaining that. Two, because it's good for distros. And I think that's actually really important. I mean, yeah, your distro can add views, but it's easier to remove functionality from the core distro if it's just removing a bunch of default views that are added by a module somewhere.
Hmm.
Three, because core can take better advantage of views, there's just parts of core that, because they're not using views, there's a bunch of stale, boring code. No one really wants to do any work on that code because in the real world, you're just going to replace it with a view anyway. So in core, it's kind of, it, I don't want to say dead code, but it's meaningless code.
Mm-hmm.
And four, because when you take the number of actually deployed useful sites, Drupal sites out there, and subtract the number of deployed useful sites that do not have views installed, that number is really small. And if you go to drupal.org/project/usage and look at the difference between deployed core and deployed views, especially on Drupal 7, that number, it's like 60 or 70% of them have views. And you got to figure a whole bunch of those deployed Drupal 7 sites that you see there, someone just installed Drupal 7, clicked around, and they were done with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they probably were done with it because it didn't quite do what they wanted. And if they had installed views, it would have done it.
Or maybe they just wanted to see what this Drupal thing was, or they were evaluating it and picked something else. There's a lot of reasons why you might install Drupal and not use it. I mean, I have head installations. I have a bunch of installs that don't really do anything.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, and he also asked, what portions of views are going into core, the API, the UI, all of it? Kind of already talked about that.
Yeah, basically all of it and a bunch of the stuff that's in CTools, because a lot of what Views does got rewritten in CTools for Drupal 7. And so we're taking the important bits and fixing them up for core and working on getting them in. That's actually our first priority, the CTools dependencies.
So is a lot of CTools then going to be going into core as a kind of side effect of this?
Yeah, at least certain underlying parts of it. And it's stuff that people use a lot. There's the plugin system, which I know of dozens of modules that use plugins very effectively. Mm-hmm. So a version of that is going into core. The exportable object system that makes features so good is going in, and there are dozens of modules that use exportable objects. It comes with a generic UI builder. I'm hoping to get that into core too. There's probably going to be some argument about parts of it, but I think we can get it in pretty easily. Some JavaScript tools like the drop button I was talking about, simple collapsible div, a couple other things I'm not thinking of offhand.
Yeah, actually, that makes me think about how many other modules are going to be able to just use core straight, you know, just straight core instead of having to install C tools first.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, in Drupal 7, you can have a dependency on C tools because Views does, and you probably use Views. So no one is, I shouldn't say no one, very few people are reticent to put a dependency on C tools anymore. It's considered kind of a sub core. But it does have the downside that there are far fewer people actually reviewing code and writing patches for C tools than for core.
Okay, so just a quick note to anybody who's listening. If you want to get involved and have a hand with getting Views into core for Drupal 8, you can go to Earl's blog at angrydonuts.com, and there's a chip-in button there that you can click to donate. That's how he's being, you know, that's how this is getting off the ground, so every dollar will help.
Three of us on the team have to eat, right? We have people who are being sponsored by their companies, but that isn't true of everyone. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for some pretty significant dollars to make sure we can spend the amount of time we need on this.
So we're looking at like a minimum of $500 a person?
Well, no, because what we're looking at is there are, I think Robert Douglas put it, there are 200,000 installations of Views out there. So if every single site contributed a dollar, then that would be enough money right there. Mm-hmm. So it's not a $500 per person, but because every single site isn't going to contribute, we got to kind of up the averages somewhat. Sure. So we need to get that out there, the people that are making money on Views because their site is doing what they need to do. It would be awesome if they could come and put in 5 or 10 or 100 or whatever it is. If they're not making much money, then a couple dollars is fine. And if they're making a reasonable amount of money, then hey, you know, kick a little bit of that back so we can keep making this stuff better in the future.
How long ago did you set up that chip-in?
Let's see, I announced 3 weeks ago now. It's been pretty recent. I think it's only two-ish weeks.
Do you know what you're looking at right now? Like how much have you raised?
It's about 8,000.
Oh, cool.
So far. So, I mean, it did really well for the first 3 or 4 days, and then it kind of trailed off.
Yeah.
some of the more recent donations, or excuse me, contributions have been bigger because shops aren't able to just go, yeah, I'll throw in some money. They have to, you know, talk about it and go through their internal process before they put money out. And so we're hoping that some of the shops that use Drupal a lot, you know, if you're a medium-sized shop and you've got 10 employees and you produce a dozen or two websites a year, it would be great if those shops could put in 500 or 1,000, because 1,000 is enough to keep some of the more junior members of the team employed almost full-time for a week or two. So
okay, cool. And if you want, if you give me that embed code, I'll put that on the show notes for this podcast as well.
Yeah, you just go to the chip in and there's a thing you can click to get the embed code.
Oh, okay. I'll
and
do that.
You need.
I'll just put it there to get it everywhere.
Awesome.
Okay, well, that answers all the questions that I had so far. So I guess we're ready to wrap up. And I like to ask everybody that I have on the show just some generic things. Like the first one is, what are you most excited about that's up and coming?
Well, let's see. I have a massive travel schedule for the rest of the year. I'm both excited and terrified of it. But I got a lot of sprints coming. I'm giving keynotes at Drupaldelphia and New York Drupal Camp. I'm really looking forward to Bad Camp in November. The people who organize Bad Camp have been very successful in turning it into the not DrupalCon DrupalCon. I mean, they had almost 1,500 people last year.
Wow.
I mean, that is bigger than DrupalCon Boston, and that is almost as big as DrupalCon DC was only 3 years ago. It's really impressive, and that was free. It didn't cost anything to go there.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
And I'm excited. Drupal Dev Days in Barcelona. I'm going there in a little bit more than a week. I went to DrupalCon Barcelona. It was almost 5 years ago now because Charlotte was 4 months old. And that was one of the greatest times I've had. Barcelona is a beautiful city. I'm looking forward to seeing it again.
Cool. Okay. And if people want to get a hold of you or find out more about what you're working on, where should they go?
I tweet a lot. It's kind of random stuff. Sometimes it's kind of jerky. I'm not always a nice guy. Sorry. I try, but you know, that's the way open source is. And I have my blog, angrydonuts.com. It's not actually angry. It's just a funny story. And there's my Drupal.org user page where you can see the list of things that I commit to. And you can Google me if you want. I dominate like 3 or 4 pages because I wrote a book on views, panels, and CCK. I should be fair. My wife, Lynette, wrote most of the book. at my direction. And that book's been out for a while. And Google loves authors. So when you Google me, it's just like, oh, you're this person, and has all kinds of great stuff that it can find.
Cool. Great. Well, Earl, thanks for coming on and talking to me.
Not a problem.
And I'll just talk to you later.
All right. Have fun, everyone.